In our podcast, we hear an extraordinary story of survival, memory, and the enduring power of human resilience. Our guest is Filbert Mazina, a survivor of the 1994 genocide against the Tutsi in Rwanda. In a deeply moving conversation, Filbert reflects not only on unimaginable loss, but on what it means to continue living, to build a family, preserve memory, and resist the transmission of hatred across generations. At the center of his story is what he calls the three R's: resistance, resilience, and remembrance. Resistance was the fight to survive. Resilience became the decision to keep living fully, to create family, community, and hope after devastation. And remembrance, he explains, is not about reliving violence, but it's about keeping loved ones alive through memory, culture, stories, and love. Filbert also speaks powerfully about justice, reconciliation, identity, and the challenge of rebuilding trust after genocide. His reflections extend beyond Rwanda to a larger human question. How do societies remember painful histories without becoming imprisoned by them? This is a conversation about grief, dignity, family, healing, and the choices that shape the future. Thank you for joining us. What brought you to Washington, D.C. and the Carter School today?
I came here because there was a week of peace, and I found very important that the genocide against the Tutsi is discussed during this week, because genocide is the source of conflict, and conflict is a lack of peace. We are in the peer commemoration period. I think it is important that conflict is discussed as well. So it was for me important to come to Washington as a survivor of the genocide to let participants know that genocide is not just belonging to history, to say that there are survivors who can bring testimony to let them how horrible genocide is, especially genocide against the Tutsi of Rwanda.
I was fascinated by your presentation, and like anybody, horrified to hear of your many losses that were both concentrated and then emerged over time. I was also fascinated by how you've organized the three R's of resistance, resilience, and remembrances. In the presentation, you talked about fighting back when you were being attacked. How did that resistance become resilience?
Resilience is a way of surviving, and resilience is another chapter of resistance, because resistance to genocide is to refuse to get killed. It's to fight for living. And after genocide, survivors, we have to fight for living too. And resilience is a way to continue to live better and better than surviving. Because surviving is good, we are not dead, but sometimes we can be dead alive. But with resilience, we fight for living, giving life, founding families, having children, and perpetuating the family. We can't replace those who were killed, but the life continue through our children. That's a part of resilience. If someone is not resilient, he's killed small and small. But when you are resilient, you are fighting again, you are strong again. And there is also remembrance. I said about fighting against the genocide, resilience, and the remembrance is helping us to keep our loved one alive, even dead, because forgetting them is to kill them a second time. And remembrance is also to say to the killers that they project to erase all the ethnic group is not success, because we are here and those who were killed are remembered while the killers are hiding themselves. They are no longer alive, the killers, but our lost ones are still alive in our memories.
It also implies that this concept you talked about in the presentation involving agency that you taught your children. And in your talking about how you, through remembrance, give life to your loved ones, by not remembering the killers, they become psychologically dead to you.
Yes.
Which gives you agency as well.
I bring my kids to know about the history of their family, my family, and I talk about how my father, my mother, my siblings, what they loved, what the meal they loved, how was life in the family. I not especially talk about their death because I didn't witness, but just I want to my children know who they were, who they are. So if they know where they come from, they can know where they go. And in all those that testimony, I don't put the accent to the killers. I put the accent to my loved ones. That what I want my children and the children of the community, children born from survivors, know from where they come from, who were their grandparents, where their aunts, their uncles, the cousins of their parents. We want to get those communities of Tutsi still alive through our children, especially through their memory.
How do you avoid not transmitting anger and hate?
That's a good question. When I talk about the life of mine, I talk about the song they loved. I talk about the sport they practiced. They practice the meal, the life, and it's not the hate, it's the love. Who was married to who, how my parents used to encourage us to go to school. Everything in our life is good. I don't talk about death. I talk about life in my family before genocide. That's the memory I would want to transmit to my children, not how they was massacred. If I put the accent to the way they were massacred, that moment I will maybe transmit hatred. And I used to let them also that all the Hutu were not the genocidaire, because there are some of them who were killed because they don't want to get involved in a genocide. That's not hate, because I want to let them that some survivors were still alive because of some of Hutus. That's not hate. And when I write my book, I used to say that it's not the Bible of hate, it's just a history of my family.
I went to college with a fellow who's was brought up as Greek American. He talks about massacres of Greeks by Turks that happened hundreds of years ago as if it was yesterday.
And before that, there was a slavery.
What is it about your culture, your communities, that allows you to see beyond that?
We talk about the history, the bad history of our nation. We talk about the racism, we talk about the discrimination, we talk about the segregation in Rwanda before genocide. But the accent is on, as I, personally, the accent is on the memory, and memory is filtered to let my children know about who was my family, who was my dad, who was my mom, who was my every one of my siblings, not who was my killer. No, I don't know to show them even the picture of my killer, if I have it. I want they have the picture of one of the family member, my family member. It's the culture of memory and not the culture of genocide.
So it's in the structure of the caricature.
But I don't know if it's the culture in general of, or if it's my choice to let them know where they come from instead of how the family member were perished.
Mm-hmm.
The accent is to know who was my mom, not to know who was the killer of my mom.
And this is what you've done with the your creation of your group, Remember.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ibuka, Remember.
Remember.
It's to know about the past, but know about who we come from, where we come from. Know about the Tutsi community, not the killers community.
Mm-hmm. No. So it's a sense of empowering yourself. The other thing, you've talked about being in Canada. How is the transformation being in Canada from Rwanda?
I came to Canada in 2000. It was 6 years after genocide. And my wounds of machete were still bleeding. Yeah. And the medicine in Rwanda was not as... And I got a treatment in Canada. The first thing who kept me alive, because I was treated adequately, I went back to school in Canada, got married in 2005 in Canada, and I got three. I have three children.
How old are they?
The firstborn is 20. She's now at the University of Ottawa, and the second one is 16, and the last born is 12.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working in Canada. I go to Rwanda to visit, and I come back home to Canada. So all my life now is in Canada, but my heart is still in Rwanda.
When you say the word home, you said you come home to Canada. Is that, but your heart's still in Rwanda?
It's because I was born in Rwanda. I'm still a Rwandan citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a second home, Canada, where I have my life, I have my family. And in Rwanda, there's still my family, my two siblings who are still alive, who survived the genocide.
Your brothers.
My brothers are in Rwanda. I have two countries. I know here I'm in Canada, but Rwanda is still my country and the country of my children.
If we'd ask your eldest, you're a 20-year-old, is she Canadian or Rwandan?
There are both, mm-hmm. Rwandan and Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
Canadian by birth,
mm-hmm.
by my choice, mm-hmm. them, but they are trying to speak Kinyarwanda, my mother tongue. They love to go to Rwanda. In December, they plan to go there for themselves. They will work all the summer to save money, mm-hmm. for the flight. When I brought them in Rwanda 2 years ago, loved very big. And they said, Dad, we have to go back to Rwanda to go back to Rwanda every time we can.
What does Rwanda then mean to them?
It's the country of their parents, a country where they come from, roots. And all the cousins, or most of them, are there. In Canada, they have friends, but not family. And family is something important in all the societies, and especially in Rwanda, the family is everything.
Talk about that. When the family is everything, is that what we call the nuclear family or the extended family?
Both. Nuclear, dad, mom, siblings. But look at that. In Rwandan tradition, the family is the force. If someone has a very large family than you, you can't compete in economy, in all the way of the life. The family is everything. And all the country was built on families. And the kingdom were founded and kept because the family was very strong or stronger than others. And in Rwanda, the extended family is the force, is the help. You need help, you call cousins before you engage money to a stranger to do something for you. The arms from the family is the economy, is society improvement. And so for me, the family, the extended family, comes to help the nuclear family. And in Rwanda, friends become easily family.
So there's a merging of friends and family. Now, for your friends in Rwanda, would you be able to call on their family members or ask their family members for help?
Sure. Let's give you an example. When I was completing my high school, dad and my two elder brothers were coming from prison, from jail, because they was considered that they were the RPF members. War was started in Rwanda, and hundreds of Tutsis were put in prison, among them my dad and my siblings. When they were released, they was not allowed to go. They were not allowed to go far from the sector. It's too late to say, don't leave the city. And when I was about to complete my secondary school, some teachers at my school who were friends of my dad contributed to buy for me the tile and to have my diploma as normal as my comrades. And I didn't know that it's not the costume didn't uniform. Come from my dad.
Yeah.
It comes from friends of my dad, but they didn't tell me. And when my dad knew that his friends contributed to make my diplomation as normal as, he said, that's a friend. There are friends. There are family. It's beyond the friendship because my child is their child.
The sense of community is very intertwined.
Yeah. And I was 100 kilometers from home.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was in boarding school in the middle of the country, while I came from the south end of the country.
So when the genocide happened, also that was killed.
Sure. That's the worst of a genocide. It's that even friends are no longer friends. There are treason. Someone who killed his best friend, who refused a refuge to his best friends. That's the worst of a genocide. Maybe there is the first hatred, but there is also a fairness. If I hide you, I will be killed. So go away. I don't want to see my... Yeah. But that's the worst thing in a genocide. The relationship who are dismantled in overnight. Yeah.
And how do you see that being rebuilt?
Very difficult.
Yeah.
Build the confidence. Someone like me who saw what happened, it's very difficult to remain confident in the other community. Because the problem is the ethnic group in Rwanda has tried to exterminate another ethnic group. And it's very difficult to bring confidence in community, but the government try to reconciliate. But for me, reconciliation comes from justice, not before justice or without justice.
And what's your concept of justice in that regard?
My conception of justice is that the person who made something wrong pay back. And what the someone who has who is innocent is known as innocent and not confused with criminals, because those criminals comes from his own ethnic group. Mm-hmm. You are innocent. You are a criminal. You're known as a criminal. And the reconciliation comes from between victims and innocent people from the other group. Because even if he's innocent, maybe his father made something wrong. How do you think he will tell my friend, as I know, that orphan because of his dad? Reconciliation can come first from those innocent people and victims, and then repentant criminals and victims. But you can understand that it's a long process. Mm-hmm. For the post-genocide generation, the reconciliation comes from, again, justice, to refuse the speech, no longer talk about favor, the favor versus discrimination, talk about competence. You want to hire a professor, hire a good professor, not a Hutu, because he's Hutu. Talk about competence and not ethnic consideration in all, in job, in public service, or the grant or bursary for student. Consider the performance, consider the competence, not the appartenance of ethnic group. And justice is also, human rights. If every human is treated as a human, not as a Tutsi because he's a Tutsi, or discriminated because he's a Tutsi, or vice versa, that will bring reconciliation.
If I were talking to you 10 years from now, what changes would you be telling me about?
In the next 10 years. I want to see my kids growing. The last born will be 22, get retired.
Yes.
And I want to see my country conciliated. I know, as I said, it's a long process, but is my country on the good way of reconciliation, or what happened? There is a high risk that it happen again. I would like to see my country progress on the highway of reconciliation. Mm-hmm. Progress, the children not growing in the hate as we grow. As our time or the time of our parents, I want to see justice, human rights is the root of the progress of my country in special, and every country in general. Not to see wars, Iran, Gaza, Lebanon, Sudan, Congo. Why never again is never again? A real never again. Why some politicians can engage their country in a war, stupid war, to kill innocent people? I want in next 10 years, there is no dictators in power.
That is a great vision for 10 years from now.
And it's a dream.
But there are parts of that you're building on, especially you talk about the legal aspects of human rights, but you also seem to have a key to restructuring memories in a way that doesn't breed hate. That's an enormous accomplishment. Write more about that.
Yes. And when I talk about I wish in next 10 years, there is no dreams inspired by God.
I want to thank you for your time and sharing your experiences. It's just amazing to think how far you have come to teach the rest of us and to give us hope. Thank you.
Thank you so much.